You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello and welcome to another movie roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I am here with Brian, who you can find on Twitter at PureRockFury. And we are here with Joe, who you can find on Twitter at MorbidLobster. You can find the show on Twitter at The Comic Roast. You can find all of our shows, past, present, and future, at comicroast.com. And don't forget to check out reviewandroast.com, which is our review website. We have movies, TV shows, comic books, regular books, live performances. We're adding stuff all the time. We got board games on there.
I'm killing it on there this weekend, by the way.
In honor of Halloween, Brian's going to kill it on the site. I don't know what it is, but he's totally going to kill it.
I'm creating brand awareness this weekend. I'm getting mad response to my Hellraiser and Paper Girls reviews.
Neat.
And Harbor.
Paper Girls is following me.
Yeah. Actually, it's just a fan site, but yeah, they're following me as well.
Why you got to crush my dreams?
I'm just telling you, I'm living large on the news groups this weekend.
Well, all right. So this is our first of two listener picks for the Movie Roast podcast. This one was Reanimator.
Picked by Jeffrey Hall.
Picked by Jeffrey Hall, who actually has hinted that he might want to come on and do some stuff in the future. So
when did he say that?
Well, it was hinted on Facebook.
Recently?
If you paid attention, you'd know these things.
Where was I? I'm not against it. I'm just saying.
I don't know.
I'm surprised.
No. Well, I told him he's got to come and wear whatever his costume is for Halloween.
I just was hoping a birthday suit would be sufficient.
That's even weirder. So, back to Reanimator. A dedicated student at a medical college and his girlfriend become involved in bizarre experiments centering around the reanimation of dead tissue when an odd new student arrives on campus.
Transmitter circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
I've noticed that more and more I try to watch these horror movies, the more and more I realize that the horror is just not really a genre. It's all just kind of cheesy and comedy at this point.
Well, I was going to wait till towards the end to say that, but...
Well, I mean, this movie is kind of meant to be that way, so it's not a knock on the movie in general. I'm just saying a lot of things that people put into a horror category, it's not.
Not particularly, no.
The closest thing we've had so far this month was the Babadook.
Yeah, sure.
But what about the idea of reanimating corpses to you does not say horror?
It's more sci-fi. Nailed it.
Yeah, but, I mean, they all, then technically, you know, I mean, any kind of zombie corpse reanimation type of thing would all be sci-fi related.
Could
somehow
be considered sci-fi, yeah. I just figure when I hear horror, I expect there be at least some semblance of horror and or like I'm trying to scare the audience. That just maybe I'm just seeing so much in my life that I think
that's what it
see,
is.
Yeah, but see, you're missing out on the idea of that there's subgenres of horror, such as like this would be more of like a gore flick.
Well, I'm just saying, it's, I mean, the official genres are comedy, horror, and sci-fi, you know? I mean, science fiction is basically anything that's science-related that's not exactly true just yet.
Technically, weird science is a sci-fi.
Science fiction, yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, it's just the sub-genres usually that they fall under.
Now...
So you don't want to announce the director, writer, actors, any of that stuff?
Well, I mean, I can, unless you want to, seeing as though you were just looking at it, it looks like.
All right, well, I'll do it then.
Okay.
The movie was directed by Stuart Gordon, who you may recognize from the movie Dolls, I believe. He did From Beyond, and he's from Chicago. Ooh, graduate of Lane Tech, which I passed by on Friday night.
Ooh, big time.
Yeah, it's right in Wrigleyville. Cast is Jeffrey Combs, who's been in a lot of animated DC Comics related and Marvel related things I found. Bruce Abbott, who really didn't do much, and Barbara Crampton, who also didn't do a ton either, although she was on some soap opera for a long time, so that might be why. And that's pretty much... You know, oh, it was written by Dennis Paoli, but it was originally based off a story by H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, this again, this could be kind of irrelevant, but I feel like in the very beginning, when they had Herbert West over there in Switzerland conducting his experiments on his teacher or whatever, I feel that he had a slight accent that was not there after maybe about 10, 15 minutes into the movie.
I didn't notice
Never
that.
Caught that.
Really? Maybe it was just me. Maybe I just assumed because everybody else was like speaking in a different language. And he was the only one speaking English. Maybe I thought there was some kind of accent.
Huh?
They were all speaking English.
But yeah, they all had accents.
Well, yeah, they had German, like Eastern European accents.
Yeah.
No, the lady didn't.
Yeah, she did. She had an accent. But she spoke English, though.
The one that said, "You killed him"?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even notice an accent on her.
Maybe it was Con Air syndrome, where, you know, they have it here, they don't have it here.
That's called Nicolas Cage syndrome.
I know, but it's really, really...
Not the
no,
bees!
But he sounds...
Not the bees!
No, Jeffrey Combs sounds the same the whole way through the movie.
He has one accent, the Jeffrey Combs accent.
Okay. Yeah. So, basically, you know, he's working with this doctor in Switzerland, and he... You know, these guys all bust into the room as he is in the middle of reanimating him, and his eyes kind of explode, and he collapses to the floor. And, you know, anywho, he's no longer welcomed where he was, so he comes to America, and he's in the, like, the new creepy student at the college that they're all attending, and...
Miskatonic University, for all you Arkham Horror fans out there.
Yeah. And so, what's his face? Is it Dan? Bruce Abbott? Looking for a roommate?
Yes.
And so he's like, "Oh, I need a place to stay. Do you have a basement?" And I mean, right off the bat, like Barbara, whatever her...
Barbara Crampton.
Megan Halsey? Halsey?
Halsey.
Halsey. Right off the bat, she's super creeped out about this guy. And now, I'm not going to say he's not, like, slightly creepy, but I think, you know, it was a little too much off the bat with, like, "Oh, my God." You know, she just was immediately like, "This guy's a creeper. You can't do nothing with him." But whatever. So he comes in. He starts working on the household pet, which to say was, Dan's cat or whatever. They can't find it. It's in the guy's refrigerator in his room. They bring it back, and it's terrorizing the basement. And he convinces Dan, through all of this, to help him further his research.
Well, you have to kind of clarify that the cat was in the refrigerator because he claims that he came home and the cat had gotten his head stuck in a jar and was suffocating, so he... put the cat out of its misery, and then decided to put it in the refrigerator because he didn't want the house to smell.
Well, he said the cat was already dead. He didn't put it out of its misery.
No, was it? Well, whatever. The cat got its head stuck in a jar, so it wasn't as if...
Right, yeah.
He had a story, at least. He probably
That was actually kind of funny when he was like, what was I supposed to do? Leave a note, cat dead, details later? That was kind of funny.
That it was?
All right. So, anywho, he convinces Dan to go help him, and Dan works kind of in the morgue. He carts dead bodies around all day. He's a doctor, or, you know, a student, I should say. But he, you know, spends a lot of his time taking the dead bodies down to the morgue, and he sneaks in Mr. Herbert West to kind of take a look at the bodies that are in there, find a nice fresh one so that he can test his reanimation serum on a fresh human body, because so far he's only done it on animals. I think, you know, outside of the cat, in his notes he mentioned like a rabbit or a dog, just, you know, small mammals. So they get into the morgue, and find the freshest body they can. They inject the serum, and, you know, and it doesn't work right away. So he ups the dosage, and, you know, Dan's kind of freaking out because we've been down here. They're going to get caught. I can't be doing it. Well, you know. And just as the dean, who actually is Megan's father, who is also Dan's girlfriend, Megan, he is coming there to stop Dan because, you know, he kind of gave him this whole little story about, oh my God, Herbert's doing this amazing stuff, and why won't you listen to me? You know, and he's basically telling him, you're never going to see my daughter again. If you don't knock this nonsense off, I'm kicking you out of school. So he came down there to put a stop to what he assumed was going on, and, you know, the corpse finally came to, started wreaking havoc in the morgue, and then the dean broke in and started wrestling with a naked corpse, and more shenanigans ensued.
More like the dean got tossed around like the Incredible Hulk was throwing him around the room.
Yes, yes, he did. So, anywho, the dean ends up dying. So they reanimate him. So, you know, because that's the absolute freshest they're going to get, because obviously he literally just died. So even still, you know, he comes back. He's basically a zombie. You know, I mean, he's alive, but he's not really conscious. He's not responding to anything. He's just wreaking havoc. Then the daughter walks in and says, oh, my God, my dad, what happened? And they're like, oh, my God, he, I don't know. He just came down and just started going nuts. So, you know, they obviously are trying to hide their research while they tried to blame everything on the dean. Then you can go ahead and enter Dr. Carl Hill, or, you know, we can call him Dr. Creeper. He is the leading brain scientist, brain surgeon at the college. So he offers to take a look at Dean Halsey, however his name is pronounced, to kind of figure out what's going on, see if he can bring him around back to normal. He's at this point he doesn't know about the reanimation, so he's just, you know, he just thinks the guy went nuts. But he also has a very creepy crush on the daughter. So, and that starts to become more evident as the movie goes on. You know, it's one thing, you know, at dinner when you can just kind of tell a little bit, but then when you find, like, the file in his file cabinet with pictures and hair clippings and very weird quagmire type of stuff. All right, so before I just go on rambling about, you know, everything here, what did you guys like about the movie?
What did I like about the movie? Truthfully, this is the first time I've seen it in about 8 years. And I remember the first time I watched it, I really just thought it was a funny, like, gory, just interesting, different kind of horror movie. Kind of a weird mix between Frankenstein and Dead Alive. It had the gore and the slapsticky humor of Dead Alive, and it had the mad scientist angle of Frankenstein, the whole, you know, I can bring him back to life, that sort of thing. Watching it again today, I didn't get the same level of enjoyment out of it, which made me feel kind of like I didn't get the same kind of mileage out of it. That said, the last 20 minutes are undeniably just super fun to watch, because it's just zany and borderline Looney Tunes mixed with Dead Alive. Just complete gore and, I guess, zombie. I don't know if zombie is the right word. Not even a...
It's reanimated corpses.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not the dead coming back to life spontaneously through some kind of virus. It's an intentional thing, so yeah. It's kind of more, like you said, it's more the brain that wouldn't die, or one of those crazy mad scientist movies from the 1950s.
It's almost like a reimagining of a Frankenstein.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Frankenstein crossed with, like, the Dead Alive, just total mayhem aspect. Yeah,
like, these guys aren't going to bite you, and you're not going to turn into one of them.
Like, they're the part at the end where they throw the doctor's head through the doorway and it hits the wall and starts sliding down, and that guard just kind of goes, what the? Every time the guard gets involved in the mayhem, just by as a passive viewer, those moments are always kind of, they make you chuckle. I thought they made me laugh. Honestly, the guy that plays Herbert West is the best thing about the movie. Him and the creepy doctor. The rest of the actors are pretty bad, and they're pretty ancillary at best. Whereas the doctor is, he's got that super serious persona, but you can't take him seriously because his ideas are so completely out of left field. And then the other doctor's got that Christopher Lee complete stone face seriousness about him, where he thinks he's like a man of letter and I am the super scientist around here and I know all the ins and outs of the working brain, etc., and dead matter, and no one's to question me. But then of course he's got the secret pervert side where he's got dirty panties in his filing cabinet. So
yeah, someone at the on the interwebs here was basically saying that whole Dr. Carl Hill thing was literally the best ever use of a headless corpse.
I can't argue.
Or a headless body, just carrying around the head and putting on the fake head and walking around with that. That was probably the funniest thing ever.
I can't argue with that. That's and there's one in Dead Alive, too, with the gnome.
Yeah, but that's not intentional, whereas this one is.
Oh, yeah.
Intentionally, they put the plastic head on him and dress him up like a doctor and walk around.
That is one of the funniest things in a lot of movies, to be honest. But there's slow, draggy parts where they try to inject this, like, human relationship drama that just kind of slows down parts of the movie. Now, going back and watching it now, like, the stuff between Dan and Melissa, is that her name?
No, Megan.
Megan. You could have stripped that entirely out of the movie. Like, there was no need for that. I get why people do it, but, I mean, if you're going for a slapstick gore fest, there's no need to have, oh, what are we going to do about our relationship? Blah. I mean, at the end, I guess it sort of patches itself back together, but that's those parts in the middle of the movie were like, I don't care about this. Get to Dirty Panty Sniffer and the Headless Guy and the Mayhem and the Lawnmowers or whatever. That's all I'm saying.
Well, my favorite stuff about it, obviously the gore was hilarious. The effects were actually quite good.
I agree with that.
Especially given the time.
And the budget.
Yeah, they were very good. Also, Jeffrey Combs is fantastic in it. He's above and beyond everyone else. He's literally, you can see he's the best actor in there. And I love his other stuff too. So, you know, he's definitely one of my favorite things about the film. He's a complete creeper. He has, you know, that drive that just blocks out anything, you know, so. You know, the idea of him having a dead cat in his refrigerator is no big deal to him, where it is to other people. To him, it's just science, you know, where he has that kind of drive that almost makes him not see the obvious, you know, that kind of thing. I think an underlying thing in there is that it tells you, you know, I mean, no matter how good your intentions are, you could be doing bad shit. And I think that's kind of an underlying message of that story in general, is that no matter how good your intentions are, in the end, are you really doing the good that you tried to do? You know, because everything isn't just always black and white, cut straight forward.
No, yeah, that's definitely a part of this that... You can argue that one all day. I feel like a lot of movies like this have that aspect to it. You know, it's always everybody else like, oh my God, what are you doing? And it's like, I'm changing the world. No, it's not always for the better.
Yeah, and I think that was an intention of the story from the get-go.
Gecko. All right, so we'll move on to what we didn't like. And Brian already kind of mentioned a little bit, but this was my first time actually seeing this movie. And after looking at people's reviews and, you know, reading the synopsis, I was pretty pumped going in. But there was a lot of times that I was, like, almost falling asleep in between the hilarity and the gore. There is so much just, oh, my God, like...
downtime.
Yes. Yes. And, yeah. You know, I understand movies got to have stuff like that to move the story, but I just, I feel like if you're going to go for the silly and go for the goofy and go for the, you know, ridiculously gory, you don't need that much filler to move the story.
Nope.
You're better off without most of it. And, again, this is whatever, you know. Okay, I understand that he was doing, you know, using his new laser drill to lobotomize the corpses to control them because they figured out that if you lobotomize them, you can kind of control them, tell them what to do. I get it. How is he controlling his body? There's, you know, no nerve connection anymore. There's no head on the body for him to lobotomize to control. Is it because it was his body that it just, it knew what he was thinking at all times? I mean, not that it matters. It's still hilarious one way or the other. And it's kind of stupid to nitpick that kind of thing. But
I thought about that and I just basically was like,
chalk it up to the
movie.
You gotta
suspend, you know, belief, disbelief for a little while. You know, it's a film.
Right. Yeah.
So I just assume because it was his body and his head, they were still somehow, you know, connected in a way.
Yeah, I agree.
I recall him being injected with the serum both in the body and in the head.
And I yes. That's how they animated the both separate pieces.
I think because the whole thing towards the beginning was like, they're listening. It's listening to me. It's understanding me. And the guy was like, no, he understands you the same way a dog does. I think because the head had the most conscious personality of all the reanimated corpses / body parts, I think the head was just, and I'm just speaking off pure speculation here, the head was able to command the body due to a former connection. I think there was probably still at least some kind of electrical connection between the head and the body, which enabled Dr. Hill to be able to tell his body where to go and what to do and when to get a plastic head to sneak into the lab with.
Yes, put him in a bowling ball bag.
I mean, if I had to break down the science of this movie and particularly that aspect of it, that would be my guess. We could try and get Neil deGrasse Tyson online and maybe he can explain better. Or he might go, what the heck's Reanimator and who are you guys and stop calling my house.
I'm also, you know, I agree. There's too many slow parts. And I honestly, like, I think they were trying to, you know, make you feel some sort of connection to the people to kind of, I guess, not lose that message of, you know, what might be good might not always turn out good, like the best of intentions, you know. So I think they tried to do that so you wouldn't lose that human connection where, that's not exactly why it's kind of movies.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, if you would have went deeper into the Gorbin, I would have been perfectly fine with that. But, you know, I mean, you expect some slow parts and stuff, but it was a little too slow at points. There was, you know, there was one great part, though, where they started getting real lovey-dovey and the dad was being commanded still. And I was just like, oh, God, would the love scene end already? And then the father comes smashing through the door. And it made me laugh because it was just perfectly timed because you're just like, oh, my God, would this end? Smash. And it just, your reaction was to laugh.
Right, yeah.
You know, so that was well-timed. Other than that, though, there are a lot of slow parts, and that's my main complaint of the film.
See, the thing, my complaint is not so much anything to do with the movie other than what I've already mentioned in the first part about the slow parts, and it just didn't give me the same level of enjoyment as before. The thing that I kind of took away from this is H.P. Lovecraft's a very famous horror author, like Edgar Allan Poe or even, you know, more modern Stephen King or Clive Barker. And he's real, he's very famous for, you know, all of his supernatural leanings with Cthulhu and, you know, all the creatures from the Arkham Horror series and, you know, at the Mountains of Madness and the Rats in the Walls, all those stories. A lot of them revolve around these ancient, you know, beings like Cthulhu being the most painfully obvious. There have been a handful of so this really isn't a knock on the movie itself, but this is billed as H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator. And the little bits of H.P. Lovecraft that I've read are very dark and very serious, and this movie is very silly, so it's hard to make the connection between H.P. Lovecraft and this movie. And no one's ever really attempted to do a real H.P. Lovecraft adaptation, I don't feel. I feel they've all been like low-budget, schlocky horror movies that have very little to do with any actual story. And I know that Guillermo del Toro was rumored to be adapting At the Mountains of Madness, but I guess, like most of the movies he's going to do, they get scrapped at some point, so I don't think that's actually going to happen now. But he said at one time he wanted to be the first director to do a super faithful H.P. Lovecraft adaptation, and it hasn't happened. And to put H.P. Lovecraft in the title of this movie, I feel, is a little bit misleading, because it's probably inspired by a story of his, but I'm going to go ahead and guess that he didn't have a headless corpse making sexual advances on a naked woman in such a Three's Company-esque sort of way, I guess. Not to mention all the other weird stuff that was obviously too funny to get scared by because it was too goofy. Even
right,
though it was super gory.
Yeah, I agree.
So that's what I'm saying. I just want to see in the future a more faithful adaptation of what his stories were.
Maybe we'll have to scour the interwebs and the Netflixes and the Primes to find something.
Good luck.
Okay.
Or if somebody listening knows.
Yeah. And what's wrong with Ray Bradbury? What's wrong with Ray Bradbury doing the Martian Chronicles too? That has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're even talking about.
I'm just talking about faithful adaptations.
Okay, so if you were the one to make this, remake this, however you want to put it, what would you do differently?
I would have had Yig show up. Hmm. Or Cthulhu. But like a human-sized one, not like a building-sized one. Just like Cthulhu. Like just like a doctor with a Cthulhu head just walked by would have been awesome. Just little hints of Lovecraft monsters walking around. Like, they don't have to do anything. You just walk by, and, like, the doctor's just walking down the hall, and then they do a quick cut to the doctor coming the other way, and it's a Cthulhu going, "Hello, Mr. Jones." And you're like, "Hello, doctor." And then just turn around, and the thing's just, like, down the hallway and turns the corner.
If I was doing it, I probably would have done it a little different in the fact that, like, once they found out that the laser lobotomies enabled you to control a reanimated corpse, I would have made Dr. What's-His-Neck, Herbert, whatever.
West?
Yes, Dr. West. I would have opened the movie with him, like, figuring that out, digging up or going to the morgue, somehow getting his hands on a fresh enough corpse to reanimate, lobotomize, and then control. And then while he's at home conducting experiments in the basement, he's sending Lobotomy McGee out to go and steal corpses and steal bodies and...
That would literally make the movie Frankenstein, then.
That would be more Frankensteinish. Yes, I mean, there's. I don't know. I mean, outside of being very much like just cut out all the fat. Like, I mean, that's just. I'm trying to.
No, I know.
You know. Well, I mean, just because you know that's similar to Frankenstein. Frankenstein didn't have. He didn't have a corpse going out and getting his bodies.
He didn't have a plastic
head. It's almost like a Frankenstein / From Hell Jack the Ripper kind of thing, where someone's going out secretly killing people, except he's bringing them back to the lab. I didn't say it was going to go from there. I'm just saying that's how it would start.
Just sew body parts to other body parts.
Well, you got
a guy with a head and just all arms.
Hey, you got to experiment somehow.
No torso at all, just all arms.
I'm just saying.
Be the arm spider head guy.
Experiments.
Another thing I'd do.
You put a dog's head on a guy.
I'd put more wacky characters from the Arkham Horror board game in there, like Trash Can Willie and the guy with the dog.
They were probably in the background. You just didn't notice.
That's what I'm saying. Get more, and then more octopus monsters. Needs more octopus monsters.
Okay.
And more board game stuff. Like they should have rolled a dice to move down the hallway.
I don't think
so. I would have went further slapstick during the more. I would have tried to make it, like, take those slower parts and make them a little more ridiculous. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, some of the stuff that goes on towards the end is so over the top. It's like, you could have done something a little. It doesn't have to be super over the top, but you could have done something to make all those other scenes like a bit funnier, you know, a little more slapstick, a little more humor, and less of the, you know, attempt to try to interject some kind of humanity into it when in the end it's just going to end up where it does.
Right. Okay, so, you know, that's kind of going to sum up that movie. Unless there's anything else anyone wants to throw in at the last minute before we throw a number on it.
No, I'm okay with throwing a number at it.
All right. Even with all the slow parts and whatever, the hilarity that ensues around all of that is definitely entertaining enough to, I'd say give it a 6. Something I'm not going to run a mile to see, but if somebody wanted to watch it, I'd put it on.
If you'd have asked me back when I saw it the first time, I probably would have thrown like an 8 or an 8.5 at it. But again, watching it today, and I'll admit that I am falling asleep during more and more things these days, I'm at a 6. It was amusing at times, a little slow at times. Nothing I need to run out and get the t-shirt, the poster, and the Velvet Elvis of.
Velvet Elvis?
Yeah.
Nice.
Overall, it kind of ends up falling in a style of movie that kind of tends to get a bit of a pass with me. And I still enjoy the film. It does have its slow moments. I give it a 7 because the gore and the hilarious stuff that happens towards the end of this film is just amazing. And the way they pull off the effects, you know, a head in a pan, you know, and it looks fantastic. There's a lot of cool stuff in this film, and I still thoroughly enjoy it. It like I said, it does have its slow parts, so be prepared for them.
Okay. So, following the movie, we started thinking, what other weird professions could you make into a horror movie? Personally, it's not really a profession that exists all that much anymore, but you get some kind of crazed, maniacal shoe repairman, and instead of just, you know, fixing your shoes or repairing your heel, he starts shoeing people like they shoe horses. You know, like he puts the iron on there and hammer them into your feet, and he just starts torturing people by shoeing them like they're horses. I mean, I don't know if it's going to go as far as where he puts saddles on them and rides them around, but I think shooing humans could be pretty brutal.
How is he going to convince people to let him do this to them?
He doesn't have to.
Yeah.
They come in there for shoe repair, and he's like, oh, yeah, oh, you don't have to take it off. And then he
drugs them and horseshoes them.
I don't know if he drugs them yet. I haven't worked out all the details. But next thing you know, the human's standing there with their leg kicked up like a horse, and he's got the metal shoe on there, and he starts cranking in the nails.
They suddenly want to eat out of a feed bag, and they don't know why they said it tastes for hay.
I mean, you know, some of them come in with these nice mullet manes, and that's like, They hammer in the first nail. And
they notice the bottom part of their face is getting longer.
Oh, why the long face?
They suddenly have an urge to race.
I'm just saying, it could be a thing.
Or be in a jousting match.
It can be a thing.
All right. I thought of making a slasher slash serial killer movie using dancing video game mascots.
Video game mascots?
You know, like when you pass by like a GameStop or one of those Liberty Tax places and you have somebody dressed up like the Statue of Liberty dancing around in a stupid intersection with a sign. And you know they're making $5 an hour cash and it's pouring rain outside and they don't have an umbrella.
Yeah.
Every time you drive by there, you're like, that's so humiliating. How do you get somebody to do that? And like, why? What is the purpose other than just to humiliate humans? I'm just thinking, what if you had somebody that just got too into character and it became Mario, and instead of spinning the sign around, they attached blades to the sign and started chopping people's heads off with it?
I'm okay with that.
Getting their revenge. It's the revenge of the working class. Take this.
I feel like that's like a recurring theme on this podcast.
Take this, Romney. I dance around in a Mario costume all day long just to put food in my face, and you're buying your bratty kid who doesn't even love you 3 Mario games just to shut him up. I'll show you. There goes your head in the back of your Mercedes. Throw the kid in the lake. Now he's Mario forever. Comes back from the dead and jumps on people's heads and squashes them like mushrooms.
I kind of went the route that Scott did, except I picked a job that was a little further back.
Uh-oh.
My idea was a blacksmith who gets this, who misinterprets something as a message from God to craft a weapon out of bone from the living. So he's kidnapping people and trying to actually like jam, you know, heat up their leg and hammer it and, you know, and trying to work their bone into a weapon.
I was waiting for more. I'm all into blacksmiths and bone weapons. It's all fine
so
by
this
me.
So this would be a kind of a horror thing set in like a medieval time.
I feel like for a horror theme, that's kind of an underutilized time frame.
Back blacksmiths?
Just no, the whole medieval time frame.
Yeah. Nobody does it, you know?
Not since Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Ooh.
All right.
Or
Tomb of the Living Dead.
What was that one with Martin Lawrence?
Black Knight. Was that a horror movie?
Scared the hell out of me.
Whoa.
No. Okay. So moving on. And real quick, we'll wrap it up with top 3 canceled or old television shows we would like to see reanimated.
Dun, 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 dun.
I like how you like started out all like epic, and then you're like, nah.
Never.
All right. Anyways, my number 3, Welcome Back, Kotter. I was
same
always
cast? Like they're all 50 and they haven't graduated high school yet?
Maybe it could be.
Is Gabe Kaplan still the teacher?
Oh, he has to be. I mean, that's the whole point.
Is Mr. Woodman now a talking
robot?
Didn't
somebody just die from that cast?
Probably, Joe.
Yeah, like Epstein did like 2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean,
you can't bring back Welcome Back, Kotter now.
No, you can. You just have to recast everything, or it could be like they've been out in the world all this time, but they've all been laid off, and now they're trying to get back into the workforce by taking free classes at like the community center to.
And Mr. Kotter is their professor?
Yes.
Except he doesn't teach him anything. He just wants Aerosmith tickets?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about all that. No, he's teaching at the community center for free, and he's volunteering his time while he takes like cooking classes on the side or something. I don't know.
Maybe it's a punishment because after he got involved in some Ponzi scheme, he went to prison for 5 years, ripping off old ladies.
No, Mr. Kotter would never do that.
You never know.
I know.
He had a grudge.
He had
against,
morals.
He had a grudge against Mr. Woodman that he decided he hated elderly people and he decided he was going to take their money.
No, no. At this point, he is an elderly person.
Yeah. He spent some time in prison.
You're
he
elderly.
Had to reflect on things and community gardens. What? All right, my number 3, in my eyes, never should have gotten canceled or stopped in the first place. Should be going on to season 15 right now, and that's Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Yeah, that show was definitely underutilized and underwatched.
It's weird because like anyone I've ever talked to that has seen it, we're like, oh my god, it's the best show ever. So how did it get canceled? And Adult Swim's not exactly the bastion for gigantic audience programming. I mean, if they're like a couple hundred thousand viewers, that's considered a success. I mean, they did multiple seasons of what's that terrible show that was on? Something Illinois?
I have no idea.
The one with Hulk Hogan? That was a terrible show.
Bottom line is, I think at the time that Harvey Birdman was on, Comedy Central and Adult Swim wasn't as popular as it is, say, nowadays. Like, I didn't even know Harvey Birdman existed until well after it was canceled. So I'm assuming that a lot of people came to it that way.
That was the second thing on Adult Swim I ever found. The first one was Space Ghost. And then one night I just happened to be flipping channels. And I was just curious. I was like, I wonder what's on Cartoon Network. I turn it on and I was like, I thought it was just regular old Hanna-Barbera. Because I saw like Fred Flintstone or something. I'm like, oh, I'll watch the Flintstones, whatever. And next thing I know, just random weird things are going on. And I'm like laughing hysterically. I'm like, I don't think this is regular Hanna-Barbera. This is, wow, this is maybe 2001. It was a long time ago. But I remember like instantly thinking the show was genius. And I kind of followed maybe like the last season of it. X the Eliminator alone makes that show amazing to me. And The Judge. Nothing?
It's been a while.
Men Talk to Mind Taker? Anyone?
That I remember.
Yep. Best show ever, bring it back. Come on, Gary Cole and Stephen Colbert. Do it. It. Do.
Weirdo. Joe?
My first one's going to be obvious. They should have never canceled Firefly. But they killed so many people. I don't know how you would bring it back. I mean, I guess you could, but you know?
It would have to be one of those recasting or it was all a dream. I don't know.
Nope. They leave all the corpses floating in space so they know where they are. They go find the reanimator. They get him on the ship. They go get all the corpses back. And then he reanimates them with the serum.
Neat. Okay.
I just saved Firefly. You're welcome, America.
Okay. Number two for me. Oh, yeah. Another one that Brian's going to complain because actors are dead is Sanford and Son. Mm. Best show ever.
That I will not dispute. That is one of the best sitcoms to ever happen to any television or stage or movie.
I agree.
My only gripe with resurrecting it would be how you're going to replace Red Fox.
Me.
I don't know. No. No, that's horrible. Seriously, who, if they were to reboot Sanford and Son, who would you have play Fred G. Sanford right now?
Off the top of my head, I have no idea, but I could tell you who can play Lamont.
Who?
Terry Crews.
Oh,
you know what? I don't even want to hear that.
I don't know about that.
Whatever. I'm saying who's in that age range, though? You know what I'm saying? Like, no. I got it. You do a newer version where Lamont's a little kid and Fred and Grady and all them are a bit younger. Charlie Murphy is the new Fred G. Sanford.
I'd buy that.
For a dollar?
Maybe $2.
Nice.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, nah, I got nothing now. I got absolutely nothing. Or you could have Kevin Hart be Rollo. Not Rollo. Bubba. Wait, he's too skinny. I got nothing. No, that's fine.
What about Donnell Rawlings?
Oh, he's my God! Donnell Rawlings can be Bubba.
Yeah. Joe's killing it on this one.
We need to find a Grady.
Grady could be
me.
No, not
I just want to be part of it.
You could be Schmitty. You're like the awkward white guy that thinks he's down the streets and you're not. And Fred tells you to shut your face all the time.
I mean, I guess.
Shut your face.
Well, whatever. Let's move this on.
Cat Williams could be Rollo. Nothing?
Yeah, as long as you get him off crack.
Oh, man, I'm going to be all harsh on my guy.
I'm just saying.
Joe's got to bring the Captain Buzzkill over here.
I know. What the
you
got to
clean him
about?
Up, man. No. I mean, he's getting, when he's on the drugs, he's a little weird.
I love that guy. Anyway, wait, you went number two, right?
Yep.
That sounded weird. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My number two is a show that lasted 1.5 seasons on FX. One of the most underrated shows of the last 10 years, The Riches, with Eddie Izzard and, what's that one?
Isn't that where, like, the group of hobos, like, crashed that
the
house?
Gypsies.
And, yeah, and they just move into that empty
Mini
house.
Driver. Yes, that's the show.
Yeah, I remember you watching that.
But they're not hobos, they're gypsies. They're basically scam artists, and they come upon a car that crashed into the swamp.
Yeah.
And they assume the identity of the Romney that is in the car right. and his new young wife. And they move into the gated community. But it's just watching them BS their way into all these different, like, high society gatherings. And
how do you BS your way into not paying the mortgage?
I guess they assume the bank accounts.
Well, I would assume.
But the guy moves to this town to become a lawyer for this big corporation. And he has the street knowledge to be able to lie his way into the job. And the guy who owns the company is so, like, messed up on drugs and prostitutes that he's too busy to pay any attention to what the guy's legal qualifications are. So he's just like, oh, you sound like a lawyer. Fine. There's your office. And then, yeah, there's all the kinds of scenes there in the show where, like, the HR person, like, you know, it's weird. Your application here says you're 6'2" when I ran the background check, but you're like 5'5". How do you explain that? I was wearing stilts. Oh, okay. That's weird. And then they leave and
I feel like that didn't happen.
It probably didn't happen. But okay. They do things like that where they're like, you know, it's weird. It says here your wife is like 10 years younger than you on your background check, but I met your wife and she seems to be about your age. Like, how do you explain that? And he just comes up with some crazy. Every time they take a step closer to figuring out he's a fraud, he finds a new way to just snake left and keep it going for another week.
Well, it doesn't last long until the owner actually does show up and they do the hula hoop around the chimney to see if he gets the house back.
Well, the only problem with that is in the part where they find the owner in the swamp passed out in the car, they kind of just gently nudge the car into the swamp all the way. And they're like, we'll take that wallet and everyone's foot on the bumper and quietly go to sleep, go to sleep. And now we're millionaires.
I need to find me a swamp.
It's seriously one of the best shows ever. Our sister even liked it. She likes nothing. And I let her borrow the DVD, and she actually went out and bought her own copy. That's how good
I find that hard to believe.
It happened.
Well, my idea is to start back up Three's Company.
Can't believe I didn't think of that.
What happens is that at some weird swingers party, Larry Dallas meets Jeffrey Combs.
Mm.
And he ends up reanimating
Jack Tripper.
Just anyone in general, or?
Reanimates Jack Tripper.
Oh, all right.
So that they can do.
They all go on a Grunion run?
So they can go knock on my door.
They spent 8 seasons fighting over Greedy Gretchen.
Just to find out that she's not alive anymore, and they got to reanimate her now, too.
Whatever. Go to the Regal Beagle and. Here's the thing. I'm walking through Target on Friday. I forget why I was even at Target. Doesn't matter. I'm looking at DVDs, and they are paring down their DVD selection as well, which is disappointing because I like streaming, but I like to physically own things still because I'm old and weird. But they have now the complete Three's Company series on DVD. I was very tempted to buy it. Even though it's still on, like, MeTV or TV Land, like, when I watch Three's Company, it's not, like, the funniest show ever. It's still generally humorous at times, but the show is so resonant with me. I could watch it, like, any time. I mean, Ralph Furley.
No, I'm not disagreeing.
That's a classic show.
I agree.
I have this weird feeling that the next generation that's growing up now, they're not going to have the same appreciation for the love of my life the way I do.
I'm pretty sure most people nowadays don't. Anyway,
They don't.
I know.
They don't. It's all you're probably getting more views if you're somebody really big on YouTube than you are if you have a television show.
That's so upsetting to me, because we're actually going to be doing a movie here for the following week when we start our next month theme. I just wanted to bring this up. Called The Hustler. And all the actors in the movie are gone. And I have this weird feeling that movie is going to fade into obscurity over the years as more and more kids are watching PewDiePie on YouTube, and that's upsetting to me because these are like craftsmen of the acting world in this film. But we'll touch on that next week.
Speaking of craftsmen.
Yes.
My number one.
Home Improvement.
No. No. This is actually, I want to say the last I heard, there was actually, they were up to a 50% chance of coming back, whereas usually it's about a 10% chance. But Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Really?
Yes.
It was. See, only, I don't feel like that show's officially dead yet, so.
It's been quite a few years, and like Larry David has said no more. But the thing with Larry David is one day he might just sit down and start writing, and it's gonna. And if that happens, it'll happen.
I'll just say
it's all up to the man, and I just want to encourage the man.
If the man,
we all want more Curb.
If the man feels like he doesn't have it anymore, I'll just say the Bernie Sanders sketch last week was amazing. So more Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I feel like with all the writing he did on Seinfeld and all the writing he did on Curb, I don't think he can ever officially lose it.
I'm just saying.
Unless he actually literally loses his mind.
True. But I'm saying the Bernie Sanders sketch was him nailing it, like
him and Alec Baldwin.
Electric Hammer style.
But yeah, Curb needs to happen again.
All right. Now, I'm not trying to discount the show he's on now, because the show he's on now is pretty good. But if Fred Savage could find a way to bring back Working, as much as I love The Office, Working predates and was highly influential in The Office even existing, I feel. I never would have thought that show would have been funny because I wasn't particularly sold on Fred Savage as a comic actor, but the two seasons of that show were so hilarious and so slightly ahead of their time, in my opinion. Plus, there was like a million great comics on that show, like Dana Gould and the guy who played Banya on Seinfeld. So it's disappointing to me that not only is that show not on, but nobody has it streaming or on DVD anywhere, because I would buy it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I remember that show.
It had the disappointing reality of having to debut a year after Seinfeld went away. So they had no show to follow or lead into, so it was like kind of thrown out there all on its own, and it just never found an audience. But it was super funny, though. Unless I've built it up in my head and it's actually terrible, which I guess could happen.
Well, mine has already been pretty much discussed. My number one is, to me, one of two of the greatest television shows ever.
Oh, God, it's Simon and Simon.
The other one is still running, which is Doctor Who. And this one is Sanford and Son, which to me is the greatest comedy television show ever. Like, there's
it's top five for sure.
No, it's top one.
I'm not gonna say you're wrong, because you're really not wrong. No. I don't know if it would be my absolute favorite, but it'd be in my top five for sure.
Yeah, for me, it's the greatest show. So we've already discussed how we could take care of the complications of, you know, Red Fox not being with us anymore. Have you guys ever listened? You had to have heard some of his stand-up, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The guy was just, I mean, he was a phenomenal comedian. The guy was hilarious. His show was great. And that's when, you know, you actually had shows that would make you actually laugh out loud when you watched them. Where, you know, there's a lot of those half-hour sitcoms, you watch them, and there's all this, you know, canned laughter in the background, recorded, or the laugh sign or whatever. It's really not that funny.
I think I would have to create some kind of complicated scientific metric to measure all the little bits of sub-information of that show, The Honeymooners, and Seinfeld, to decide which one truly, actually, in a micro percentage way was the true funniest show of all time. And that would take like years of work, and I'd have to quit my job and never go outside again.
Yeah, the Honeymooners. That's
and I actually, another. I'm just saying, I'm not against it. So if somebody wants to come up with a college level grant money type gift for me to do this experiment, I am more than willing to do it. So there you go.
Okay, nerd. Well, I guess wrapping up, you can find me on Twitter at xorsonx. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Theory, and you can find Joe at Morbid Lobster. Don't forget to go to comicroast.com. We got links to our iTunes, our Stitcher, our Musings of a Geek page, all on there. And you can also go to reviewandroast.com, and you can review stuff. You can there's a rating system there. You can go and rate stuff and sign up and comment, and it's fun times. So you should join us in our fun times. That is all for today, and we will see you on Friday.
Take it easy.
You are now leaving the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.